Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks a tailback is when your tail curls towards your head. That's Lenny. He has one of those, actually. Some breeds do, some breeds don't. Week 5 is in the books. We're closing in on the one-third mark of the season. Yet again, everything we thought we know has been proven wrong. Last week, I said there was a clear top tier in the AFC, the Chiefs in the past. I still feel that way, although we're going to talk about the Chiefs later and some of their struggles. And then I also said in the NFC, I thought, you know, it was undecided. The Cowboys, the Eagles, the Saints, maybe the Packers. Well, the Niners showed up, and they showed me up. Told us all to put some respect on their name. And that's why we're going to talk about them this week. I've been waiting for the right moment. And this is it, because they've got a really big game. Probably one of the most anticipated games of the season so far against the Rams. We're going to talk about a couple other big games, including the one mentioning the aforementioned Chiefs. And to do so, I am joined today by a new guest of the show, Stephen Ruiz from USA Today.
It's a pleasure to be here, talking to one of the best NFL analysts out there. I'm talking, of course, about Lenny, but it's nice to talk to you too.
Big fan of your work, Stephen. You guys should check it out. Your Twitter handle is just your name, right? Stephen Ruiz, I think.
There's a "the" in front of it. The Stephen Ruiz, oh. Very pretentious.
The Stephen. Is there another Stephen Ruiz? Is that why you did that?
There is. There's a couple of them.
That makes sense. It seems like a pretty common name. There's only one other Mina Kimes in the entire world, and it's a 20-something Swedish girl who I feel sorry for, because every now and then she gets tagged and stuff, and I'm like, I just don't want to drag her into this. But I feel like with Stephen Ruiz, there's so many that you can't really, you know, bring shame to the name.
There was one that was like a member of Hell's Angels, and he like got charged with murder. I like topped him on Google like 2 years ago, and it was a very big moment in my life.
That's not, see, your name is so common, that's not like when your name is, you know, Jerry Sandusky or one of those, not funny, no laughing matter, but some people have really, I always like those Twitter threads where it's people with offensive names or names that have like become newly offensive or problematic, and they're all sympathizing with each other. I really enjoy it when that happens. But we're good, you're good, you're it's a common name. You should find it. It'll be obvious which Stephen Ruiz on Twitter he is, because it's a lot of NFL takes, a lot of great NFL stories, does a lot of great stories on trends in the league. And Stephen, I'm really excited to talk about this Niners-Rams game, and I just want to get into it and kind of clear the decks for the first half of this show, because I think these two teams are extremely interesting schematically in terms of what they represent about NFL offenses and offensive approaches, how those approaches are still evolving. We'll get to the Rams, and I think it's really interesting to look at the Rams vis-a-vis what we've seen from the Niners. But we've got to start with San Francisco. DVOA rankings just came out. They're first overall, fourth in offense, second in defense. So let's start there. Let me ask you, which of those strikes you as more sustainable?
I'm going to say offense, just because I believe in Kyle Shanahan, and he's been crafting good offenses with usually mediocre talent before he got to Atlanta. So I see that continuing, but this defense is for real. I was skeptical before I really like started studying them. I started studying them last week, and I don't want to compare them to the Legion of Boom, just because that's like hallowed ground for me. I love the Legion of Boom, but it's the fastest and most aggressive defense I've seen since that defense.
Wow. Well, first of all, you mentioned Legion of Boom. I would be remiss to not mention Richard Sherman turmoil, or just engulfed in turmoil right now on account of Handshake Gate, which I can't believe I didn't spend the first 20 minutes of the show talking about that, because it has completely derailed my day. Every 10 seconds, a new video has dropped of the Daft Bruder film, as I'm calling it. And
that's so
I
bad.
Am
it's so bad.
I know. I had to say it out. I as soon as it left my lips, I regretted it. But I love Richard Sherman. He is 100% in the wrong here. I love him as a player. He's one of my favorite. I think he's a Hall of Famer. But he was not telling the truth about the handshake, I think, pretty clearly. One thing, though, Stephen, that he was telling the truth about is that the rest of the secondary is a lot better than I expected. Like, Richard Sherman has this, Seahawks fans are well aware, he has this humorous history of, like, pumping up other, like, unknown cornerbacks. famously Theryl Simon in Seattle. Every year he seems to say, well, this rookie cornerback is amazing. You guys haven't seen him in practice. He's brilliant. And then he sucks. But in this case, he was talking up Witherspoon's backup, Emmanuel Mosley. And, you know, going into this season, just let's start staying in the defense for a while, I thought this D-line would be good. Nick Bosa, to me, was like basically a slam dunk draft pick, right? He was maybe one of the, I think him and Williams struck me as the highest up floor players in the draft. But, and obviously they went all in on the D-line trading for Ford. They've been going in there with draft picks for a while. I've always loved DeForest Buckner. But I thought the secondary would be trash. I'll just say it. Aside from Sherman, they decidedly did not look like trash last night.
Right, and then even with Sherman, there's always concerns because he's older and he's had injuries. And they've kind of been hurt early on in the season. Like Jimmy Ward, that was his first game last night. And then Akello Witherspoon, he was playing well the first couple games. Then you have this undrafted rookie, Emmanuel Mosley, and he made that one play in the end zone. That was like a Richard Sherman type of play, like Richard Sherman in his prime. And then even Jaquiski Tartt, he was making big plays behind the line of scrimmage. I'm really impressed by the secondary because the secondary was kind of hyped going into last year because some of the young guys like made some plays in that first year with Jimmy G, and then they were just all bad. Like Akello Witherspoon just forgot how to play football. But then you remember this offseason, and the safeties remember this offseason. Now they're pretty good.
Yeah. Tartt, right, is another one who jumped out to me. I'm like, oh, like he made a bunch of plays. I think, look, obviously having a great pass rush makes your secondary's life a lot easier. Thank you to the 30 men who explained that to me in my mention last night when I praised the secondary. I wouldn't have known otherwise. But the secondary was doing stuff in the red zone that was just them, right? Like that one pass breakup Mosley had where he anticipated Baker was going to attempt the tight window throw. I think it was to OBJ off the top of my head. Was it OBJ? I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think it was. Nope, it was Demetrius Harris. Anyways, yeah, that was just good football playing. And I think it's interesting, Stephen, because one of the stories we talked about going into the season was, I don't know if you caught that PFF piece on pass rush versus coverage, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would seem that the Niners went all in on building the pass rush, both through free agency and the draft, and strategically, their approach has worked out. I think. It's funny with the Niners, right? Because this, what we're seeing right now is the fruition of a multi-year plan that's been very focused on the defensive line, and it kind of feels like the plan is coming together.
Right, and I'm going to eat some crow here. I was critical of the 49ers for what they did, like signing the pass rushers, drafting pass rushers early, not really, I guess they were neglecting their secondary in my mind. Apparently they weren't. I didn't realize how good these guys were. And like you said, that wasn't all the pass rush. I know the pass rush made a lot of plays, but that's just what you see on television from the broadcast angle. But Baker was holding onto the ball. He was taking a couple extra hitches. He was padding the ball. Like, that's the secondary holding up and giving the pass rush time to get home.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Baker and some of his struggles and some of the offensive struggles later when we talk about the Seahawks and the Browns. But I to kind of go back to your question, the original question about whether the offense or defense is for real, I think I'm with you on, I think Kyle Shanahan is the best play caller in the NFL. I'm going to back into that take. I feel pretty comfortable saying that. Which
when
is
someone
why
clips this
I kind
later
of largely...
and you're like talking like that, they'll like excuse you if it turns out to be wrong. It'll be fine.
That's I need like to start that. Doing that for all of my takes. It's like how Levitard show, whenever they're talking about a serious topic, they'll have Stu Gatz wear something ridiculous so that when they clip it, it looks ridiculous. I need to start giving my best takes in a stupid voice. But yeah, I'm a big Shanna fan, and I, like everyone in America, was extremely dazzled by what they did last night. I think, and let me hit you with another kind of what now nerds question. So far this season, the Niners have run it 74% of the time. So, everyone was wrong about the run game. Running backs matter. You guys were wrong, right?
Do you want me to give you the nerd response or the I love Kyle Shanahan response? All right, I'll
give me
the
combo
response
because I think that I was being sarcastic. I don't think that any of this is incoherent, but I'd like to hear what you have to say.
They have been up a lot in a lot of these games, which has led to more running. But I have seen stats where it says like based on situation. They're running less than expected. So I think you do have a point there. But, I mean, when you can run like they can, I don't think it's a typical run game. They get advantages in the box. They get extra blockers. They get space. Like, Shanahan is so good at this. He's like a mad scientist just pulling every string correctly, and he just makes these giant holes. I don't have a problem with his approach. I think he does run maybe a little too much, but when you can design a run game like him, just go for it.
Yeah. I think people tend to misrepresent the analytically inclined approach towards running, which is more so that don't run when it's not optimal to run, or when you're bad at running, or when you're playing a really good run defense, right? We'll get to the Seahawks later. But I don't think Shanahan does that, which is why he's not at odds, I think, with some of these tenets, largely. I look at this offense, and the talent is in the running back group. It's in Kittle. The offensive line looked really good last night. I actually didn't come away from last night's game thinking anything about Jimmy Garoppolo, good or bad. He was fine. I still think that pass catcher group is lacking. I wouldn't be surprised if that they're one of the teams that might be looking at like a Diggs or a Green in a trade potentially. But as far as how to counter them, because they haven't destroyed teams as much as they have last night, I look at this matchup against a Rams defense that's been actually better against the run this year than the past, quietly, but historically has not been great against the run. And, you know, let me ask you, if you're the Rams defense, what do you do to stop this Shanahan outside zone driven run offense? Do you perhaps do what teams have been doing to you?
I think that question is kind of hard to answer now that Juszczyk is out. Like, that's going to put a damper on their run game. That kind of bums me out as a fan, just wanting to see this run game continue to go at these good teams. But, yeah, I think you have to load the box. I think you have to take the same approach and force Jimmy G to beat you. I was thinking this last night. I was like, if I had a choice between Goff and Garoppolo, I have no idea who I would take. I feel like they kind of have the same strengths and weaknesses. Like, sometimes they miss throws they shouldn't make, or they shouldn't miss, and then sometimes they make odd decisions. But then they, like, every drive, you just get one of these just dimes down the sideline, and then you're just right back in. You're like, yep, I'm sold. I'm back on board. I don't even know who's the better quarterback. So, yeah, I would take the same approach. Like, don't let this running game beat you, because this running game is so dangerous.
Do you think that, and this is kind of, we can transition to talking about the Rams offense a little bit and what they might bring to the table. So when I say the approach, we've seen every single defense, including Seattle last week, play the Rams offense in the exact same way to take out outside zone. We've talked about it a ton on this podcast. There's a lot of benefits to that, on defense in terms of, basically, to sort of rehash this for the 10,000th time, when you have six defenders on the line of scrimmage, you're no longer getting those easy double teams the way you used to. But on the plus side, you are opening up certain parts of the field. Do you think that would work against San Francisco?
No, I don't. I think now I'm going to go with it. I'm going to go with this hot take. I think Shanahan is better at McVay. And the only reason I say that is because he has a longer track record. And I think he's succeeded with multiple styles of quarterbacks. So I could see him making things a little easier on Garoppolo. I think McVay has done a good job of scheming up the offense, but he still kind of made it hard on Goff. He's still had to make some really tough throws. He's not getting easy throws over the middle. I don't think they're really getting that benefit of play action when you get the linebackers to come up, because teams are really only playing one linebacker now. And they're dropping the safety into the box, so it's getting harder for him. And I still think McVay needs to adjust. I think he needs to make things easier on Goff. It's just hard for him because I don't think Goff is like a natural, quick game, three-step, you know, take the snap, read the defense really quickly, and get the ball out on time and accurately. I think Garoppolo did show that his first year. That's when people were comparing him to Tom Brady.
Mm. Yeah, so when you do that approach, what Steven just described, you leave some space between like the numbers and the hash open, so you can hit some outbreaking routes and curls. And I actually saw Jared actually hit some of those in this last game against Seattle, which he has not been hitting this season, but his life is a lot harder than it was last year, for sure. you know, I think you wrote about how they've been running more toss plays as well. What we saw in the last game, Stephen, was a really new approach, not something they've done all season. So far this year, I asked Seth Walder to pull it up for me. Okay, so prior to this last game, the Rams had used 12 personnel 5% of the time. Against the Seahawks, they used it 36% of the time, which is obviously a massive, massive increase, and something that Seattle did as well, actually, in this game, interestingly enough. But it seemed to work. I don't know if they're going to stick with it, because Seattle's a unique opponent. Obviously, they play way more base than the rest of the NFL, which, you know, when you're going with 12, it can hurt you when you're running the ball, but if you're passing it, you got a tight end like Gerald Everett, who's a really good pass catcher. You can get him isolated on linebackers and such. I'm not sure if that's the approach there, if that this 12 thing was a blip, or if it's the best approach to take against San Francisco.
Yeah, I think that's a big question going into this game. I agree with you. Like, yeah, Seattle's been playing a lot of base defense. I do think Everett just has a larger role in the offense now. I think he's been better at blocking, yeah. and McVay's been more willing to put him on the field in run situations. I think last year the percentage was like 90% pass when Everett was out there, and that was like a big key for the Patriots. When Everett was out there, they played played nickel against 12 personnel. When Higbee was the one out there, they were playing base defense. So I think that is a big thing for the Rams offense. That's an adjustment McVay had to make, and we're going to see how much that works going forward. I think Everett's going to continue to play, but you still have to get Cooper Kupp on the field. I think he's been their best player on offense.
100%, especially as teams have been playing them with significantly more zone, which Jared Goff is worse against statistically. It's pretty dramatic. Cooper Kupp is their best zone breaker. He's been that for a while. So watching him run off, like on and off the field against Seattle, it was kind of not just because I'm a Cooper Kupp fantasy owner, but it was like, no, that's your best, you know, he's honestly their wide receiver one at this point to me. I want to ask you though, like you've looked at the Rams offense. We've talked a lot about why it struggled, and I think it's been a little bit confusing because they actually, I think they rank, let's see, seventh in rushing DVOA. Gurley's numbers when he does run are not terrible. So I think some people, there's a sort of narrative, well, if only they got back to their identity and ran Gurley more, everything would be fine. Why are they getting away from what made them great last year? Can you explain why that's not the case? Unless you think it's the case.
I don't think it's the case. I don't think they need to run more. I think they need to continue to do these counters to their old runs, those wide zones, the weak side zones. They're not able to run those anymore. They don't have the offensive line to run them anymore. Even if you give Gurley the carries, I think his efficiency will go down, especially if you're giving him the same carries you gave him last year, where you're just running over that left side where you had Whitworth, you had Saffold. Now you know you still have Whitworth, but he's not playing at the level he did last year. And then Saffold's been just the biggest loss of the offseason for them, I think. He hasn't been doing really well in Tennessee, but he was the key to that running game in my mind. He was the one getting to the second level and blocking those linebackers and creating lanes for Todd Gurley. You're just not getting those anymore. His replacement, I think it's Joseph Noteboom, who sounds like a Harry Potter character, he has just been whiffing when he's getting to the second level. I don't think he's athletic enough to make those blocks. I need to watch more of him, but I just don't think they have the offensive line to use that same approach.
Yeah, so I didn't get to see any of the offensive line starters in the preseason. Noteboom and Allen had redshirt years last year, basically, right? They were 2018 draft picks. I thought that might be like a issue at the beginning of the season, but I didn't think the tackles would struggle as much as they have at times. I thought they were actually slightly better in this last game, but Hamsey in particular. But you think, okay, well, even if they've got these guys adjusting on the interior, at least Whitworth came back and Havestine's on the outside. But you're right, they have struggled across the offensive line. And I would note that we're using struggle in somewhat of a relative term. I know that their grading is like one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. But The reason why I think everything's been thrown off, even though Gurley's still running fairly efficiency when he's in there, is that the Rams offense was so outrageously efficient running on early downs last year, which obviously runs counter to like everything, you know, we like, or everything we call for in football. Like they last year ranked first in yards per play on first down. They ran it a ton. This year, even though the rushing game overall is somewhat more efficient, they rank 19th in yards per play on first down. And this offense, because it was so historically predicated on, it's still on play action, you have to succeed on early downs for that to work, right? And then otherwise in third down, you've got Jared Goff becoming a dropback passer. And I think really the simplest explanation for the decline in efficiency, and by the way, I thought Jared Goff played a lot better last week than he has, but they're just not a, you know, like robot killing machine sent from outer space on first down anymore, and it's thrown everything off.
And I think part of that is something you already mentioned. They're playing more 12 personnel, or they're being forced to. And I think part of their success last year was just having lighter boxes. Not only lighter boxes, yeah. You're drawing nickel defenses, and then you have blockers like Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. Those guys are basically like tight ends who can just run like wide receivers. So that just gave them a blocking advantage. It gave them more space. It allowed McVay to do more things in the run game. I think there's a lot of issues here. I don't think it's as simple as, oh, they're not running the ball enough. Like, there's so much at work here. I don't think there's a quick fix. That's why I'm kind of down on the Rams so far. I don't know if it does get better.
I still think they're a really talented team, right? Like, especially, you know, on defense, I think right now, 9th versus a run, 24th versus a pass, it looks a little bit like it did last year where they're still not able to get enough of an outside pass rush around Donald, who's still like a, you know, monster. I know Tlaib looked really, he had a down game against Seattle, but prior to last game, I actually think the defense in the secondary in particular have been fine. So I'm not particularly worried about them. I just think, I guess, you know, going into this game against San Francisco, this battle for, well, it's Seattle, I guess, is ahead of Los Angeles now in terms of NFC West. By the way, NFC West, I guess NFC North is the best division in football. But
I'm taking the West over the NFC North.
Would you take the West over North? Well, okay, so let's do this head-to-head. Green Bay, how would you rank the NFC North teams?
I would put Green Bay first. Lions, Vikings is hard for me. And I guess Bears, too. I think those three are just all there, and they're not far behind the Packers. But I really like the 49ers. Like, maybe I'm too high on the 49ers. They haven't really played anyone yet, but this is what good teams do. They kind of blow out bad teams, and they win games when they turn the ball over five times, like they did against the Steelers. So, and I like the Seahawks, too. So those two teams at the top. I mean, I'm down on the Rams, but I still think they're a playoff team, a fringe playoff team. The only reason they wouldn't make it is because the West is so good.
Yeah.
And I just love Cliff. And so, I mean, I know they're not good, but I still love them.
Well, okay. Just to go to this game really quickly then. I mean, we talked a little bit about some of the wrinkles that McVay has rolled out and sort of the potentially what this defense could, should, maybe will try to do to counter this Rams rushing attack. Do you feel like the Niners, just based on what you've seen so far, are a significantly better team?
Yeah, I think they're a more balanced team. I think they're better on defense. I do have faith that Wade Phillips will figure it out.
Me too. They were
having the similar problems last year, and he figured it out at the end. And in the playoffs, they were good on defense again. They held Tom Brady at 13 points. But the 40, they're just so much more talented. They're younger on defense, especially in the secondary. I think they're faster. They have a better pass rush, a more balanced pass rush. I know Aaron Donald's just an eater of worlds, but DeForest Buckner is really good. Like, he's one of the most underrated defensive players in the league, and I think he's really the key to that pass rush because they use him in very interesting ways. They kind of use him like the Eagles use Fletcher Cox, where they put him right on the center. And that makes the offensive line like have to pick a side, and then they put Dee Ford and Nick Bosa on the same side, and now you have single team blocks with those guys, plus this monster in the middle. You just can't block them.
He had a strip sack and a batted pass against the Browns. Buckner, I feel like DeForest Buckner is becoming one of those like football nerds. Like nobody talks about DeForest Buckner playing. You know, like your football writer's favorite football player. You feel like he's kind of in the mix. But you're right; he's very good.
That's how you prove you watch tape. You're like, yeah, I know who DeForest Buckner is.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to take the Niners and the team. I just think the Rams coaches are still very good. I understand what we've said about McVay, and they're obviously. I like that they're coming up with new stuff. I know, like, I think, you know, they almost won the game against Seattle. Like, I think, obviously, you know, the teams are leaning on a very specific blueprint to play Los Angeles, but I do think McVay has come up with some interesting counters. I realize that there's still more to be done. I remain curious about when they're going to start using Daryl Henderson to that end as well. But I think from a talent perspective, the gap is not that big. I don't know. I just wouldn't be surprised if this was closer than people think.
McVay's offense looked different in Washington than it did in Los Angeles. Like he didn't really do the Jets sweep stuff. I think Cousins was in the gun more. So he's shown an ability to adjust to his talent. I think he'll do that eventually. I'm just not confident it's going to happen in time for them to win enough games to, you know, get a good spot in the playoffs and then make a run in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's fair. I think also, like, there's just questions about whether or not Jared Goff has the skill set. He's obviously not an improvisational quarterback, right? Whether he has the skill set to play in those different schemes and succeed. I think as a Rams fan, you should be somewhat heartened by what you saw out of him against Seattle. He made some of the best throws I've seen from him in a really long time. And those were the throws that I kind of mentioned earlier when teams play that 6-by-1 and draw down the safety. You talked about it. He was hitting those throws that are there when you do that. And if that's going to be what they're facing going forward, those are the throws he's going to continue to have to make. But it's going to be a great game. And we're going to talk about Seattle and Cleveland next. But first, I want to tell you about Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes. The best part? Once a loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/Mina.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
As always, guys, if you leave a review, a 5-star review in iTunes, please remember my mom reads all the reviews, and a question, we'll answer it. First question is from, this is funny. So I'm a little bit behind Steven. I'm still in the summer on the questions because I've gotten a lot of them. This is from FJIDOS. I don't know if that's like pronounced like Fjord Fidos. I am a Washington football fan. Talk me off the ledge. What do I have to look forward to?
I have no idea how to answer that question. I'd say it's Dwayne Haskins, but he's not ready apparently.
What would you rather be, a Redskins fan or a Dolphins fan?
I thought about this question today, and Dolphins fan, 100%.
Yeah.
They have a plan, at least. At least they have a plan, and I know Steven Ross doesn't have the best reputation, but he's not Dan Snyder. Dan Snyder has this long track record of never having good teams and meddling too much, so I'm picking the Dolphins. Plus, you live in Miami.
That's true. Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what sort of head coach they go for, and I think that just first and foremost, it has to be either someone who believes in Haskins or someone who they want to just move in a very deliberate direction otherwise, if he's really not the guy. You know what I mean? Like, it's
right.
What they had was the absolute worst possible combination before. T. T-Storm asks if we think the Packers' ownership structure is a liability or an advantage in terms of putting together a football team. Well, with the Packers, it's been interesting. I was thinking about that last night because we were talking about team building and the Browns and the process, which is funny because the Niners basically went through, granted it wasn't comparable to what Cleveland did, or they didn't have the same element of deliberateness, but they did go through several losing seasons to get to what we've seen. And the Packers, you know, over this last free agency sort of became a different team in terms of their willingness to go after free agents. We've seen it pay off in a big way. So I guess it just depends on what executive is running the team and less on ownership.
Yeah, and I think, like, the proof is in their success throughout their history. I feel like the model has served them well.
Yeah.
You're not making rash decisions like the Redskins did. The Redskins fired their coach like every 2 years.
Yeah, if the counter is an owner who met, I mean, probably the less voices, the better. So, yeah, it's probably good, right? I mean, some owners are fine and don't do anything, but if you've got an owner who is intervening in drafts, it's probably not good. Chick Chunk, great name, asks, Chick Chunk, if the Bills should build an indoor stadium to attract talent, yeah, I'm not like one of those, like, I love football outside in December people. Like, no way. The Vikings' new stadium is great. It's so comfortable in there. If I was a free agent, I would 100% rather play in a stadium like that.
I like how games look on TV when they're in a dome. I know that's, like, not a popular take, but I like how the light reflects off the helmets. I like, it just looks better to me. It looks, I don't know, it just gives it more pomp and circumstance. Maybe it's just that they play the Super Bowl there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so you see how, like, cool they look and it's, like, optimized. Have you ever been to the Viking Stadium?
I have not. I've been to a couple indoor stadiums. I like the Texan Stadium. That's one of my favorite stadiums. Yeah.
I was just there. I'm always haunted by the Super Bowl when I go there and, like, I think about the last one. Yeah, it's, they're more comfortable. Like, you know, let's be real. Bo Holland 132 asks, what is one moment in your life you'd like to relive? Well, it's, you know, probably the tip, probably the happiest moment of my life. One moment I'd like to live that I never got to relive was Lenny's birth as a pup. I didn't get Lenny until he was 3. So I often wonder what he was like as a puppy. What about you?
I'm a Panthers fan. And
really?
I don't think you're going to be happy with this. Yeah, I am. It's not obvious based on my Twitter. I try to.
It really isn't. That's amazing. Good for you.
But I'm going to go back to 2015 when they beat the Seahawks in Seattle. That might have been my top moment as a Panthers fan. It was a great moment. You want me to recount what happened?
No, it doesn't really. Remember when there was like 5 years where the Seahawks and Panthers played like 3,000 times, by the way? I'm so
they
glad
played
that's
every
over.
Year in the Seahawks. Won
literally every
time.
Year and like in the playoffs. So
until
annoying.
That game, that was the first time they won. That's why it was like a cathartic moment for them. And then they went 15-1, and then they lost the Super Bowl. And that was now I can't even think about that season besides that one year.
Wordit asks if we feel like people, analytics people, look to have their biases confirmed, such as running backs don't matter. Yeah, I actually think, yeah, I'll say it's true. I think everyone does, honestly. Like, there's very few people watch football or take it in without wanting their priors confirmed in some ways, honestly. That goes for old school football people, that goes for tape ears, that goes for analytics people. I think, you know, but a willingness to admit that you're wrong or that something's not supported by the numbers is really important.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wants to just be wrong, like, all the time. Like, no, I actually hope that what I'm putting out there is complete nonsense. But no, yeah, that's what it is, I think. Fair. It's just the willingness to be wrong and to admit when you are wrong.
What's something from a football perspective that you've changed your mind about? Well, we talked about how we both thought the Niners' secondary wasn't going to be good, and they've been good. I guess is an example of something.
Oh, a lot. I'd say paying quarterbacks. I used to be strictly like, don't pay any quarterbacks.
I'm kind of the same way.
When the Seahawks, like, I know you're not going to feel this way, but when the Seahawks were about to sign Russell Wilson, I was like, maybe they shouldn't sign him. Maybe they should trade him for 3 first-round
You were
picks.
One of those. No.
I was one of
That's
the original.
So
I was saying
stupid.
It after they won the Super Bowl. I was
That's
saying it after they won
take.
The Super Bowl.
That's such a bad take.
Oh, I know. At least I've admitted it, though. I've admitted it since. And I have.
Yeah.
I'm very much Russ for MVP this year, so I'm going to make up for it.
Are you on the Russ for MVP? Okay. Well, that's a good transition to my beloved Seahawks, who are playing the Browns. I still think this is a good game. The shine has come off a little bit, but the Browns are so erratic. I don't think what we saw against San Francisco is necessarily what we're going to get, especially in a home game. Well, let's start actually with the Browns before we get to the Seahawks. I mean, there's this kind of narrative that's taken hold that everyone had put the Browns in the Super Bowl. I don't think I saw that literally anywhere. That strikes me as one of those straw men. But I do think people looked, and I would put myself in this group, at the talent on paper and thought they would be a lot better. And I quite frankly, I think they're not living up to their talent in any way.
Yeah, I think like the opposite was true. Like people wanted to be so like not on the hype train that they were like, "No, the Browns are probably going to be an 8-8, 9-17." They were saying it like you said that one take earlier, like, "I think they might be 9-7." But yeah, I thought they'd be better too. I was skeptical about the coaching staff, and I honestly don't think the coaching staff has been too big of an issue. I don't know if that
might
be a bad
thing.
Whoa,
really? Because I just said under my breath that's borne out, and you just said I don't think that's too big of an issue. So let's start there.
Right.
I don't think on defense. So I and actually, just to kind of nip this, I don't think the defense is a problem on this team. I don't really, even though Matt Breida averaged approximately 45 yards per carry against them, I'm not really worried about the defense. I think they were put in a lot of bad positions, you know? So I'm not worried about Wilkes. Kitchens, though, you don't think that's a problem?
When I watch, I admit, I haven't watched the team since week 3. I watched the 49ers game, but I'm like not like studying what they're doing on offense. When I watched those first 3 weeks, they had open guys like all the every play.
Yeah,
they had Beckham getting open deep. I don't think Beckham's been a problem either. I think the offensive line is bad. I'm gonna say that right away. But Baker has made it look worse. He just isn't the same quarterback. And what's weird to me is I had like reservations about Baker coming out because I thought he was not great in the pocket. I thought he could throw the ball well, but I thought he had issues in the pocket where against pressure his footwork would get erratic. And then his rookie year, like none of those issues were there. And I was like, oh, well, I'm an idiot. I must have just been seeing things. And then I reversed my take on him. And of course he just reverts back to those issues that he had at Oklahoma. And now we're seeing them. I think they're affecting the whole offense, honestly.
Interesting. I mean, I so just to stay on the Browns offense for a second here, I think it's one of those things where everything is bad, right? Like, I don't know how many, like, what percentage of the pie to put on everyone. I would probably put a third on the quarterback, a third on the offensive line, a third on the coaching, honestly. Baker was under pressure, this is PFF's version, 53.8% of the time, and his passer rating under pressure was 0. So, there's that. This is in the Niners game. The thing about the line though, you're right. The line has not been as bad as people have thought, but they've not been good. And then last night I thought they were terrible, right? So absolutely Mayfield deserves, I think, a ton of the blame. He's missing throws. He is obviously his footwork is all over the place. He's just not standing tall in the pocket at all. Well, he's not a tall person. But I don't think, like, you can really put... I know, to go back to the pass rush versus coverage debate, I know the trendy thing is to blame quarterbacks for pressure. But say that in my best old-school football voice. But when I watch them, I think it's pretty 50-50. I mean, Greg Robinson, like, I probably would have been comparable to him.
That's fair.
And by the way, like some of the play again, like putting in, there was like at one point, was it Demetrius Harris is the tight end was blocking Bosa in that game at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, there was a lot of, like, it feels like Kitchens hasn't figured out how to make adjustments to not only, there's only so much you can do when Mayfield's just missing throws, right? But in terms of, like, the constant pressure and how it affects him as a quarterback, I don't feel like Freddie Kitchens has come up with solutions to that.
No, I think you're right. Especially in this last game, I thought there was no adjustments made. He just kept letting Baker just get pummeled like all game, and then just some other decisions he's made, like letting Odell return that punt late. Like that made no sense at all.
Why did they do that? Why did they? Yes, don't use Odell in the red zone, but use him to like ever. By the way, red zone. How many targets is it?
To return a punt in a 3-possession game. That's when he's useful. And then the draw on 4th and 9, like. I think about that like once a week.
You wake up in the middle of the night thinking about the draw on 4th and 9. The red zone play calling in general. Like, I agree with you. I think it's a little bit unfair. Like, especially in this first half, by the way, like on those first two drives, the play calling wasn't bad. Guys, you're right. Guys were open. He's got an issue when he gets into the red zone. I mean, there was a point where the Niners just kept stacking the box and he kept calling off tackle runs over and over.
I think we simplify play calling too much. Like, there's, like, situational play calling. There's just, like, general, like, offensive philosophy. And then he's the coach, so he has to manage the whole team. I don't think he's done a perfect job in any of those aspects. I like his play calling, though, between the 20s, I'd say. Like, he's generating open opportunities. They're just not hitting on him for whatever reason. Like, even you had a couple last night where there was, you had Odell open. I think he was on like a deep out, and Baker just missed him. Odell got both hands on it. Maybe you should have caught it. And then you had the Callaway deflection, which was just a weird play. It was a bad throw, but a bad catch. And then you got an unlucky bounce. And then you had fumble.
Bad throw, bad catch, bad unlucky bounce. He was wide open. Odell was doubled on. Like, that's not on. People were giving Kitchens crap. They're like, oh, Callaway just came out of suspension. He's playing out of the slot for the first time. Dude was wide open. There's only so much a coach can do.
Yeah, do you want him to go out there and throw the ball, like, and catch the ball? Like, that was a great play design.
Hey, Giselle.
You don't get that space in the red zone without a great play design.
Exactly.
So, yeah, if I had to put percentages on it, I'd go higher on Baker. I'd say, like, 35-40%. And then the line, I'd say, like, 30. And then the rest, you can put the rest on Kitchen.
Nick Chubb looks good.
Yes.
This is another one where they're like, the offense should run through Nick Chubb. It's like, well, no crap. They want to do that, but they fell behind, like, by 500 points. And I think that's what they're going to try to do against Seattle, by the way. A Seahawks defense that's been not great. They haven't really played great offenses for the most part. They're pretty even in terms of efficiency against the pass and the run. But a defense that, as we discussed earlier, in terms of talking about the Rams, it has not gone in the same direction as the rest of the NFL. Now, so far it's been working. I don't really think it'll be a problem in this game. Do you?
Actually, I'm kind of interested to see how this goes, because I think their perceived weaknesses, Seattle's defense, kind of lines up with the Browns' offensive weaknesses. Like, we question whether they can get a pass rush consistently, especially off the edge. I know they have Clowney now, but you want to see Ansa do better. They have Puna Ford, and they have Quentin Jefferson. Like, they're getting pressure, but you want to see consistent pressure off the edge. If you can't get it against Cleveland, like, who are you going to get it against? And then I want to see the secondary tested by, I know the Browns' offense, passing offense, hasn't done well, but they still have Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry back there, so you're going to test this young secondary that's kind of hasn't performed well based on what they're getting graded by on PFF. Like, they're not doing well. So
they're not. Let me be clear. They're not good. So part of the reason, for those who don't follow the team super closely, the Seahawks have played so much base is because that secondary, the lack of talent back there. And the linebacking group is one of the best in the NFL. Honestly, I would put Dallas probably.
It's the best. I think it's the best.
You think so? You think it's better in Dallas?
Yeah, I think Bobby Wagner's the best linebacker in the league.
A Panthers fan. You love to hear it.
I'm a Panthers fan.
You love to hear it from a Panthers fan. You just love to hear it.
He's better than Luke.
Oh,
3 years ago, I would not have said that.
Isolate that sound, please. Man, Jalen Smith has been balling this year. But I think you're right. I think Bobby Wagner's better than him, first of all. And Yeah, with KJ, who was phenomenal in this last game. Michael Kendricks, they've been blitzing him a lot. He's been great. Some of the backups even have been really good. So that's where they have a ton of depth. So they've kept them on the field. Now, the CX defense has not been able to gin up too much of a pass rush. They rank 26 right now. But it's starting to trend in the right direction. I actually think Clowney's been really, really good, right? We know getting sacks is not really his thing. But he was doubled a ton in the Rams game. And I think that once, and not in this game, but once Jaron Reed, a defensive tackle who is serving a six-game suspension related to a domestic violence incident, while he... I think once he returns, that's going to really unlock Clowney, because Anza is still obviously not 100%. But they've looked better and better. But the offense, the Seattle offense, is clearly the strength of the team, which, you know, some people might have said going into this season. First overall in efficiency, tweeted this, 28th in pass play percentage. How does that make you feel?
It makes me kind of sad. I love Brian Schottenheimer jokes, but you can't make jokes when he's number one in efficiency. You just can't make those jokes. I think he's doing well. Like, they're running the ball way too much, but he's doing well generating these deep shots. And Russell Wilson,
that's,
give him
yes.
credit. He's making
Thank
amazing
you.
Throws.
I actually think some of his play calling has been really good. It's really, it's like, it's moving in the right direction. But yes, anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
Can I make my Russ for MVP pitch? Like, I don't even think it's a competition
yes.
right now.
Oh,
I think it's
on this
him
pod?
And then nobody
on
else.
This podcast?
All right.
We'll talk about Mahomes in a second when we talk about Texans Chiefs, but he's been a god this season.
You're not exaggerating. You're not. Like, I think NFL Research tweeted out a stat where there's only been one player in NFL history that has had a completion percentage of 70% or higher and a yards per attempt average of 9 or higher. And Russell Wilson is tracking to do that this year, which is just crazy to me, given the tough situations they put him in, because he's passing on 3rd and 10 and 2nd and 10, like, more than any other quarterback.
Part of the reason I was high on this offense going into the season is, you know, people were really worried about the pass-catching core after Doug Baldwin retired. But one, Tyler Lockett is on... one of the most underrated wide receivers in the NFL. I don't think he is anymore. I think he's starting to climb into that upper echelon where people kind of recognize how good he is. But I was excited about the rest of the group, and despite the lack of depth and experience, and I'm not going to pretend I knew what Will Disley would become, and I'm a Huskies fan. They drafted him to block. Turns out he's got, like, the best hands of any tight end in recent Seahawks history, certainly more than Jimmy Graham. He's been phenomenal. They don't really need DK Metcalf to do anything other than run in a straight line and beast over guys, and he's been doing that. The only problems I see, the offensive line is still well below average, although Jamarco Jones came into this game, fifth-round draft pick, I believe, from last year, and he was really good, so there's a lot of optimism about that. And then just, you know, Pete Carroll, who I think is a great coach, but so far this season, he's every now and then made some boneheaded decisions, whether it's, and I'm not even talking about the play calling and leaning on the run, but some decisions in terms of, like, challenges, time management. He has been, I think, the limiting factor on this offense.
Yeah, and you have to say his just overall philosophy kind of, like, limits the offense too. Like, put the ball in Russell Wilson's hands and let him throw the ball. And yeah, he's always liable to make a weird mistake. I don't even want to say, like, dumb mistake, just weird, like, just bizarre.
Just weird, yeah.
But I think on balance,
he's a
great coach.
Like, he challenged OPI. Yeah, he's clearly, his record speaks for itself. But yeah, he challenged OPI and he was right, but I was like, don't throw that challenge, right? He said afterwards, he was like, guys are telling, he says, this was the quote, I know it's pass interference. I'm thinking it. And the guys are telling me I don't think they're going to call it. Aw, screw it. I'm going for it anyways. Pete, no. If they're telling you not to challenge it because of the way it's been adjudicated, don't call it. Timeouts are important. Sorry.
That reminds me of a Doug Peterson challenge. I think it was his first year where he challenged to win like 2 yards on second down. It was just an amazing challenge. He won,
yeah.
But they should have just said, no, you lose the challenge on principle. And then, speaking to Pete Carroll, the decision to kick the field goal at the end of the half, like, and then his explanation after was like, I knew we were going to win the game, so I didn't want to get desperate. That just, I was...
He was like, well, I didn't want to give them the ball back or something, but, like, they only saved, I don't know, whatever, I don't want to get into it. It still makes me angry. Right now, the line in this game, by the way, it's still Cleveland by 2.5. It's in Cleveland.
Yep.
I feel like that's going to change. Wow. Okay. Well, I don't, maybe I'm too, you know, the recency bias is hitting too hard, but I'm going to take Seattle in this one. What about you?
Yeah, that's an obvious pick for me. I worry that maybe Seattle's weaknesses on defense line up with what the Browns have been struggling with, but I don't see it mattering because Russell Wilson is just in God mode right now, and Cleveland's missing its corners. Like, I don't see that stopping.
Yeah, I don't know
he's going to have another fantastic day.
Speaking of things that are fantastic, be sure to check out another great ESPN podcast, The Right Time with Bomani Jones. This week, Bo begins his new series, Sideline, about boosters in college sports with friend of the pod, and my pod too, Spencer Hall. Download and subscribe to The Right Time right now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And speaking yet again about fantastic and quarterbacks who are playing in God mode, Texans Chiefs, two of my favorite quarterbacks to watch in football, two teams that they're not going in different directions. Again, I still heavily believe in the Chiefs, but not all is great in Kansas City. So why don't we start there before getting to Houston? Are you at all worried about Mahomes, the offense, the injuries, all of the above?
I'm not concerned. I don't think Sunday night's result is going to matter at all. I know people are starting to say, oh, there's this blueprint to stop the Chiefs' offense. You play tight man-to-man coverage and you get pressure on Mahomes. That's the blueprint to stop any offense.
Yeah, and when they have... right. Get pressure with four and play tight man coverage. Great. Awesome. Sorry.
And get some turnovers and, you know, stop them from scoring.
I'll do it.
Yeah, great blueprint. But once they get Tyreek Hill back, like, I think that just makes... playing man coverage, that just throws it out the window. The Patriots had to double him every time in that playoff game, and people are like, oh, they did a great job. They gave up 31 points in one half. Like, is that the benchmark for stopping the Chiefs offense? If that's the blueprint, you need a new blueprint.
It's always like when going into every Super Bowl with Brady, it's like, yeah, you got to just get pressure with four. Well, yeah, no crap. The Hill, by the way, you're right. He makes a massive difference in terms of, and Watkins wasn't playing in this game either.
Right.
He was participating in the pregame drill, so I imagine he'll be back probably in this game against Houston. And it does, but we'll see. You know, his greatest asset is his speed, and he's coming off of a pretty tough injury. So we'll see if he's 100% himself. I mean, look, Mahomes is, the discrepancy between his play versus zone and man is pretty significant. He averages 12 yards per play, that including sacks and scrambles against zone, 7.3 against man. By the way, and this was also from Seth Wilder, Indianapolis, in weeks 1 through 4, played man 30% of the time against Kansas City, 78% of the time. The God,
right,
Frank Reich.
Huge. It was huge.
I just love Frank Reich, by the way. He might be, like, I don't know if he's, I don't think he's the best coach in the NFL, obviously. You know, he hasn't, but he is definitely up there for me. Probably, well, if the Colts make it to the playoffs, I imagine he might get coach of the year, don't you think, given the luck stuff?
I think it's between him and Sean Payton. Like, if he keeps the Saints afloat
it's gotta
be him.
That's true, it's probably Payton, yeah.
But one thing I think people don't realize about being able to play man against the Chiefs is it really hurts their run game, and we saw that against the Colts.
Yeah.
Because we know they do a bunch of RPOs, obviously, and the best way to defend RPOs is to play man coverage, because then you have a guy, mm-hmm. you have a hat for a hat on the outside, and you can stop those little flare screens to Tyreek Hill. When he's not out there, it hurts. And then you don't have that numbers advantage in the box. That's why they couldn't run against the Colts, really.
Well, so and their entire offensive line is banged up. Not the entire offensive
line.
That's
plus
not fair. But so Eric Fisher's been out. So Cam Irving got, you know, absolutely worked by Justin Houston in this game. Andrew Wiley, the left guard, got hurt in the third quarter. And I think, but Irving was the one who stepped on Mahomes' ankle, right? I think.
Yeah. When he got Irving was the problem, I feel like.
Yeah. So that was a huge problem. And that's the other thing, right? Mahomes' ankle, like mobility is a big part of his game, not in terms of running and scrambling, but, improvising, throwing off the run. Like, yes, if we're in on top of playing tight man coverage and rushing, getting pressure with four, having Patrick Mahomes have a diminished ankle is another key to a game.
And then hope half the offensive roster just dies.
That's all it takes. Half of the wide receivers are hurt. The offensive line is banged up, and Patrick Mahomes is hurt. And that's the formula for stopping the Chiefs.
And that's how you win by 6 points against them.
There was a who was the guy? What's his name? Byron Pringle when he scored a touchdown? I was like, what the hell is that? How did the Kansas City receivers? It's like with the Patriots running backs for a while. Like what Byron Pringle? Like is he just a made up man that they pulled off this? I'm sure he's a great guy and a great player. I'm just saying.
He won a contest. He was a fan in the stands. He won a contest. Like, catch a touchdown from Patrick Mahomes.
Whenever I always have to add disclaimers because it's someone like Byron Pringle's cousin's going to text me. Oh, Byron Pringle, very talented. I will say just going into this game though, again, like, you know, not all of these problems that we've been discussing, even if Hill's back, these injuries are still an issue. Let's stay there for a second. Would you just sit out Mahomes? Would you consider that? Let him get healthy? I don't know when their bye is, but like sit him out for a couple games if his ankle's banged up.
No, I would not do that. Who's their backup? Is it Chad Henne?
Matt Moore.
Oh, Matt Moore. Same thing.
He's not bad.
I'm a Panthers fan. I went through a season where Matt Moore was the opening week starter. So you're going to have a hard time convincing me of that.
That's true. I don't know. I mean, I think they're, you know, like they're bookmarked for the playoffs and... well, the other formula to stop the Chiefs, again, in terms of thinking through Houston, is according to the old school football heads, run the ball and keep them off the field. So the Chiefs were actually, the offense had just barely under their average number of drives. So to me, it was a lot less about keeping them off the field and more the fact that the offense didn't stay on the field. So I don't particularly by that. I do think, though, the Colts, you know, it was less about time of possession to me and more just about their run game being, you know, very good against a Chiefs defensive line that's still sorely lacking.
Right. But I was kind of encouraged by this performance by their defense. We have such a low bar for their defense because as long as they keep a team to like 25 points, you're probably going to win. But I like the pass defense. I like Tyrann Mathieu, what he's bringing to the defense. Frank Clark is good. I'm higher
is
on
he?
The defense
Wait.
Now.
I don't know.
Are they
about
missing
that.
Him in Seattle?
No. I mean, yes, they're missing what he was when he was in Seattle, but he's been really unproductive in Kansas City. Certainly, I don't think he's lived up to
his contract.
He
made a couple splash plays on Sunday night, which I'm probably like just inflating what he's done the rest of the year. But yeah. I'm still high on the defense. They had a great pass rush last year. This goes back to the coverage pass rush thing. Like, they were like the poster child for that debate. Like, they had a great pass rush. They had no secondary. I think the secondary is a lot better. Yeah. Oh, he's amazing. He's in that Buckner group for me.
Oh, yeah, guys. Well, you know what? It's hard because his name is Chris Jones. It's like really, I feel like it's just kind of unmemorable. I think that also affects, like DeForest Buckner, you'd think people would remember more because he's got like a more unique name. Chris Jones. I worked with a writer named Chris Jones and he battled the Chris Jones, the player, but it wasn't really a huge issue because people didn't really remember the player's name. But
he needs one of those nicknames that's like not actually his first name. Like, oh, I'm actually Scooter Jones.
Yeah, you know or like War Daddy.
Like Boomer Esiason.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. Okay, listeners, come up with a new nickname for Chris Jones. Bones Jones. Oh, that's already taken. John Bones Jones. Yeah, sorry. Please, nothing Chiefs related, by the way. Yeah, I don't know. They've been okay. what's his, Bashaud Breeland got totally worked in this game, but, you know, it's T.Y. Hilton. But I think the secondary's been a little bit better. And, yeah, listen, Frank Clark is not, he didn't come out of nowhere. He has a record of being good for a very long period of time. So I wouldn't be surprised if he improves. And by the way, we should also add, in this game, Anthony Hitchens was out, like, at least half of the game, I believe. And so they had some injuries on the inside. So I'm not worried about the Chiefs. I do think that pass rush is sort of the key to this because we saw last week what happens when Deshaun Watson doesn't face a pass rush or pretty much anything in the way of defense.
Yeah, that was one of the most embarrassing defensive performances I think I've ever seen. Like, it's kind of hard to tell when, like, a defense isn't really playing well or being coached well, but I feel like that game you could have, like, this is not how defensive football is supposed to look.
It was wild. I don't even... It was crazy because... Okay, first of all, let me just grab... So Watson wasn't sacked. He was hit once. This is Deshaun Watson we're talking about. He wakes up and is sacked 18 times. Okay? Like, for him to not get touched is... I actually do think Houston's offensive line has been slowly gelling. I thought the rookie Titus Howard in particular has jumped out to me as getting better and better every week, and then Sharping's at the other guard position. But it is really an indictment of the Falcons' pass rush, who outside of Grady Jarrett, like, burn it down, man. Like, I don't know how Dan Quinn, I don't know. It was,
how,
and then the secondary on top of that
thing?
Was, oh my God, it's... Beasley, I mean, and then the secondary, like, there were a lot of coverage busts, but a lot of times they were just, it was just mismatch, which I get it, like, DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller is one of the best 1-2 punches in the NFL, but maybe don't send three guys to cover DeAndre Hopkins if Will Fuller is on the field. It's just going to throw that out there.
And there was, like, one snap I saw on Twitter where they were playing cover zero, but rushing three at the same time. I don't even know how that's possible. You have no safety deep, but you're rushing three.
Just mathematically, where were the players?
I guess they're on the sideline. They're interviewing for Dan Quinn's job.
Oh, my God. It's brutal. But this is not about the Falcons. I unabashedly love watching Deshaun Watson play football, and this was really, like, from a Texans perspective, this was just such a joy because it's so, sometimes it's so gruesome watching him, like, you just cringe and wince when he gets hit, and it's so fun to watch him when he gets to, and by the way, it wasn't just, yes, defense was bad, yes, he didn't face a lot of pressure, but he was also getting rid of the ball really quickly, Steven, which is not something he's historically done. He got rid of the ball in 2.43 seconds in this game, the fifth fastest of any quarterback in the league. That's not normal for Watson and the Texans.
And I think the offensive line played well last week against the Panthers,
yeah.
And the problem was mostly on him for holding the ball and missing some throws. So, yeah, that was a big change. And it's kind of another indictment on the Falcons' defense that he was able to get the ball out quickly,
right.
And he was still throwing it downfield. Like, usually
a
longer drop.
Yeah, right. When you're ranking the highest in getting the ball, rid of the ball, and also in, you know, air yards and completion percentage over, like, that's not a good combo for you on defense. It's games like this, though, and we'll see how, you know, what happens against Kansas City, that make you think the Texans, they're kind of stars and scrubsy, but you they're so talented at a few positions. And by the way, Watt's been absolutely incredible this season, and I think Merciless has been really good as well. Then, you know, they're still missing Clowney on run defense. But that said, you look at them, you think, this team could win. Like, I can see a world in which this team wins the Super Bowl. Am I crazy?
Well, I'm not going that far, but I could see a world where they push a team like the Patriots in the playoffs. And I don't think we give enough credit to Romeo Crennel. I think he's one of the best defensive coordinators in the league that no one ever, like, points him out. Like, they don't bring him up in that conversation. You always hear Mike Zimmer, you hear Wade Phillips, but Crennel is really good.
He was on, I did the best top 10 defensive coordinators in the league, and he was on my list, so I guess.
Oh, well, I apologize.
Cool. Yeah.
They
laid a real egg, it was the night game a couple weeks ago, right, or something, so I feel like defensively, and then it was like on that final drive when they were playing prevent, I feel like he took a took an L there. But yeah, but by and large,
we only notice prevent is bad when it doesn't work.
I know.
Like, usually it works. Like, 90% of the time it works, and then the one time it doesn't work, we're like, why are you playing prevent? Oh, because it worked the other 90 times.
No, I agree. Consistently, like, over the years, he's had defenses that have ranked in the top 10 at DVOA over and over. Well, let's wrap this up. So you've got a team coming off of a very easy win, although it came down to, like, a single possession. But, and then you've got the Chiefs, who are battling injuries, but they're still the Chiefs. How do you see this playing out?
I don't think the Texans have the bodies in the secondary to run with the Chiefs in man-to-man coverage, which is apparently how you have to play to beat them. So I see the Chiefs having a bounce-back game. I'm hoping, because I like to see Deshaun Watson play good football. I'm hoping they match each other throw for throw, and it's a close game, but I'm going to say the Chiefs win comfortably.
You know what stinks? You know who does have the perfect personnel to play the Chiefs? New England.
The Patriots?
Yes, sadly. Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's CEO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA. ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Question number one. What was your best Halloween costume ever?
Ooh, I'm just going to go with a cat. That was like my most successful. It's the most fun I ever had. I dressed as a cat. It was like 4 years ago, too.
Oh, wait. Okay, so how old were you?
I was an adult.
Like 24.
Yeah.
Like, are we just talking cat ears or cat makeup and a cat outfit? And
oh, no. I had the whiskers painted on and like a little nose.
Oh, okay.
And the ears and a tail.
But just like normal human clothes?
Yeah, like jeans and like a black shirt.
It's not a great costume. What about as a kid?
It's a great costume. You're not dressed like an idiot, but it's also like a conversation starter.
Cats don't wear jeans, though.
They should.
Did you do Power Rangers? What were you thinking as a child?
Oh, when I was a child, I can't even remember. I was just such a basic kid. I was probably doing like vampire and stuff. I'm sure I did Power Rangers. I was really big into Power Rangers as a kid.
Can kids be basic?
I was a basic kid.
Question two. Is Gardner Minshew a good Halloween costume? It's kind of a yes or no.
Yes, definitely.
We're going to see.
There's so many ways you can go with it. You can wear like the jean shorts, the aviator. It's like perfect.
The leisure suit. Are you ready for the sheer number of Gardner Minshew costumes that are going to hit NFL Twitter? I think it's going to be a lot.
I'm going to be looking for the cat costumes on NFL Twitter, to be honest.
What about a Gardner Minshew as a cat? I feel like you got to do some kind of.
He does play for the Jaguars.
Oh, question three. Miami and Washington are playing this weekend. Who's going to win?
Miami.
I think so, too.
I'm really high on Josh Rosen. I think he's played pretty well the last couple weeks.
First halves. Like, every first half, he's been good.
And the Redskins have been terrible in second half, so maybe that they even out in the second half. Dolphins get out to a big lead, and then the Redskins just choke down the stretch. Yeah, I'm going Dolphins.
Well, the Redskins are just going to run the ball a ton, right? That's what they've come out and said. So I feel like as long as they can keep it close. Question four. Where does Teddy Bridgewater play football next year?
Ooh, that's tough. Washington.
What?
Going with the Redskins. I think Haskins gets the Rosen treatment.
You think so? Oh, wow.
I hope he doesn't.
No, but Snyder, I don't think with Snyder, though, right?
That's a good point. because he's all in on Haskins.
Yeah, here's so. Okay, so you got the Bengals and the Dolphins, who will probably pick high in the draft, so I don't think it's either of them. Then you look at the Titans and the Bucks as possible options, in my opinion. I think the Bucks are going to stick with Jameis. I don't know why. I just have a gut feeling. Now, I personally think the Bears should look for a new quarterback, but I don't know if they will. I'm going to go with the Titans. Oh, the Broncos will throw in there, too, but I think they're going to ride with Locke, so I'm going to go with Tennessee.
Yeah, the Titans are a good pick. To be honest, I just couldn't think of another good answer in Washington came to mind.
I should have named all the teams first and, you know, helped you out. Last question is, as always, from Lenny, my dog. I can't be held accountable for his questions. He has journalistic independence. Lenny wants to know, I showed him your picture of your avatar on Twitter.
Okay.
He wants to know what's growing on your chin and if you've seen a doctor.
That's facial hair, and it made my cat costume look so much better. Lenny? is he listening?
Yeah, of course. He's right here.
I'm more of a cat person anyway. Sorry, Lenny.
Yeah.